What's up? It's Sarok, the Goddess MC, and you are now rocking with Doper Than Dope, where all things dope are discussed and played. Y'all already know what it is. Peace.
You heard Doper Than Dope. My name is Teacher. Keep it real. Hip hop.
What's up? It's Reverie, and you are now tuned in to Doper Than Dope.
Because it's Doper Than Dope.
Doper Than Dope.
Doper Than Dope.
My name is Suki.
This is MC Melody.
Ich bin Haskara.
I'm Jürgen Blackrock.
My name is DP.
My name is Rebecca Lane.
What's cracking, y'all? It's your girl, Gavlin.
Big shout out to Doper Than Dope.
Doper Than Dope.
Doper Than Dope.
Keep it fresh. That's how we do.
What's up, y'all? My name is Sarok. I am the Goddess MC, originally from Washington, D.C. and in the States, but I live in Atlanta, Georgia. That's where I got my start. And I do what's called God Hop, which I feel like is an emphasis on lyrics being really important and being like kind of the primary focus of the music. Nothing false, nothing fake, but real lyricism or real content. And that's what I do.
And that's what we are doing here on Doper Than Dope. My name is Nifty MC, and I'm extremely happy to share today the talk I had with Sarok. She's one of my personal favorite MCs, so it meant a lot to me to sit down with her and talk about her music. We recorded this interview right after her show in Berlin in February, so we're gonna start with hearing what that night was like for Sarok.
Every experience I've had here has always been really dope. I think that Berlin has shown me that y'all really love like real music, real raw music. So much of Berlin reminds me of the golden era of hip hop. There's so much graph, like there's a lot of culture here. A lot of upholding of the culture as far as hip hop. So I always feel that whenever I do a show and, you know, the energy reflects, so it's dope.
I'm not from Berlin. I saw you once before, a couple of years ago in Leipzig. I don't know if you remember that show. But,
yes, I do.
Yeah, that was also really dope. And you were there with Dynasty, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Who is also really dope.
Yeah, she's amazing. She started a little earlier than me, but we kind of started around the same time. And I remember seeing her for the first time with the song that she did with Premier, Epic Dynasty. And I was just like so blown away by her energy. Like, you know, we remain really good friends, and she's just a dope MC all around, a dope person.
Yeah, yeah, nice. So I wanted to start this interview by asking you, what was the first ever rap album you listened to?
Ooh, the first ever rap album. That's a hard one, because I'm sure I probably heard it being played like on radio and stuff like that. But I will say the first one that I ever bought was so inappropriate. I was 10 years old and I bought Doggy Style by Snoop Dogg. And that's the first one that I remember like listening to. And I knew all the lyrics, and again, inappropriate. Very inappropriate, but yeah, that's the first. But I remember, you know, hearing Salt and Pepper back in the day on the radio and stuff. But like when I was coming up, go-go was a really big thing, which was very prevalent in like hip-hop music, like in like the 80s and stuff. I was young then, so I didn't really hear it that way, but like go-go was really big in Washington, D.C. That's like our main form of music, and it combines like funk and R&B and like drum percussion sounds and stuff like that. And so that was primarily what I listened to. But yeah, I would have to say Snoop Dogg, Doggy Style.
All right. And with that out of the way, what would you say today is your most favorite rap album?
That is a crazy question.
I know.
My favorite rap album. That is a very hard question. But if we're to talk about like albums that I keep going back to that never get old, I would probably say either ATLians or Aquemini by Outkast. Like, I love both of those albums very much. But I think ATLians because at a time it was at a time in my life where I was just really kind of discovering like the idea of just exploring alternative like information and like feeling like I didn't belong, you know, exploring like kind of metaphysical stuff, whatever. So that really connected with me, and just like the musicality of the music like really resonated with me.
All right. And how did you get into rapping yourself, like in the first place? How did you get started?
It was really by accident, honestly. I had no intention of rhyming. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I had just left college, and I moved to Atlanta, and that's where I ended up meeting Soul Messiah. He was a producer at the time, and at the time, he's still a producer. But he was producing like music for these really dope Atlanta-based artists, and I was obsessed with the album. It's an album called the group is called Jadis, and the album was called Coop the Villains, and I was obsessed with this album. Played it like nonstop, and then he used to have these beat CDs, so I would just listen to his beats like going to work and da da da. And one day we were in the studio, and I write poetry. I had a whole little poetry book, and I wanted to hear how I sounded over one of his beats because I was always listening to it. So just as an experiment, so I got in the booth and I recorded something. I thought it was trash, but he heard something. And he asked me to record a couple more, and we ended up recording more, and it ended up becoming my first EP, dope. Astral Chronicles. Yeah,
that's dope. And you've kept on working together ever since, right?
Ever since, yeah.
Yeah, yep. That's awesome. Do you remember your first show ever as Sarok?
Yes, it was actually a fundraiser for, at the time, a political prisoner named Matula Shakur. He had since been released. He just got released last year, but then he passed away. He was ill. So he was Tupac Shakur's stepfather. And we were raising money and fundraising for him in the community to just have legal funds and like healthcare and stuff like that. And I didn't know I was going to perform. I had my stuff being played on Soul Messiah's radio station with another an activist and the co-host of this radio show. And he just out of the blue called me to the mic. And as you know, in hip hop, like when somebody calls you to the mic, it's no time for you to be scared. It's no moment for you to like second guess yourself. You just got to get up there and do your thing. And so I ran up there and I started spitting, and I felt like I was so awkward and nervous and stuff, but like the crowd started like feeling it, and I was like, hold up, okay. It started working for me, it started clicking. So from that point on, I just started performing in the city.
When was it? Which year?
This was 2008.
Okay.
2008.
Wow. Yeah. So you've had quite a lot of time on the mic and on stage since then.
Yeah. Yeah. And because I started like immediately, I didn't really have time to like not be comfortable on stage, because as soon as I started performing, I started getting put on shows and stuff like that. And I was in a community of like really dope underground MCs in Atlanta. So I had to match like their talent and their skill level. So I had to learn really quickly. So, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. You already released a ton of music, a lot of it independently. And then you signed to the label Rhymesayers, right? What was that process like, and has it influence the way you do music at all?
So it's a joint venture, so it's not like a traditional like label contract. What happened was, apparently there's a person at the label who's been with the label for years. He is like a music head. Like he scours the corners of the internet to find music that he loves, something that's different. So he found my music and he liked it. So he would be listening to it like every day in the office. And the head of the label heard, like kept hearing the music. He's finally stopped and was like, who is this? And so he started listening, and they at the time had a festival called Soundset where they were bringing artists of all popularity, all levels of popularity, basically. Huge artists, headlining mainstream artists, and then like independent artists and stuff. So they booked me for Soundset, and it was my first really big festival. And I was so excited, and they were kind of like, I guess, scoping me out to see, you know, the potential. So like that next year was when we started discussing potentially putting out a project, and then we did that, and then we eventually ended up, you know, signing. So I think that there's a difference in terms of the frequency with which I release music. Before, we were releasing like once, twice a year. But when you have a label, you have a team and all that stuff, like it becomes a little bit more, kind of structured with the way thing, and then the timing of everything, production timing and all that stuff, that changes, because we never had wax before. We used to just like kind of guerrilla style print up our own CDs and stuff like that. So that's a beautiful thing, you know, to have a team that helped to manifest like your vision as far as artwork and like all of that, and then have support for like PR stuff and all that stuff. But it does change the way you can just drop something quickly. Like there's more of a process. So
Okay. Now your name is Sarok, of course, and it refers to Sarok, I believe, of the Funky 4+1. Is that true?
Yes, that's a part of it. Initially, it was the Sa was, you know, stood for like a part of my name. So my birth name is Asada. So Sa represented that. And then the Rock was representative of like how hard I spit. And then it was like the Rock was like a precious gemstone. And then Sa, I found out, was the hieroglyph for an Egyptian hieroglyph, the word for protection. So I felt like I protected like my people and the culture. So I was like, that's perfect. And then like about a year later, I found out about Sharok.
Oh, okay.
So then it became like an homage to her.
I see. But that came later.
That came later, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting, because I always thought like, oh, okay. So it's like a shout out to back in the days, because like she was so early, like one of the really early MCs.
Right. Yeah. So we actually got to connect. She called me one day and was asking me to support her, because she had a day named after her in the Bronx, and she had found out about my music and she really loved the music and stuff. So that was really a beautiful full circle moment to have her.
Nice.
You know,
yeah.
Connect with me and just affirm what it is that I was doing, because I owe everything to her, you know?
That's awesome. Nice. How do you feel about the state of the music industry? And you talked a little bit about that on stage, and I feel like especially for female MCs, there's like this one stereotype that you have to kind of fulfill in order to be really successful. And I'm not even like hating on that or anything, like no shame on, you know, Nicki Minaj or anyone, like they're good, they're dope. But to me, it seems like if you don't want to like be that kind of stereotype, like the rap bitch, then it's really hard to be successful on that type of level.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. I think that we see it with MCs. I feel like Rhapsody, who can wrap circles around most MCs. And, you know, while I do believe that she's getting her recognition as one of the dopest MCs, period, I think that her reach will be even greater if maybe she fits some of those archetypes of what a female MC should say. I mean, that's just my speculation. I'm not putting that on her or anything like that, but I definitely feel like there are so many brilliant women MCs who are playing the long game when it comes to this thing career-wise, and that's a part of it, you know, doing something that's anti-traditional, you know, when it comes to women MCs and the expectations of how women should present within this industry. You get sidelined a lot because they I guess are going with what sells or what's popular or whatever. They don't want to invest in something that might take them a little longer to push, you know. So we know it's a money game, but for us it's a passion game, it's a love game. So we're still going to stick with it and speak to the people who are resonating with the music that we put out. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. Was it for you ever a thought to, like, I don't know, like lose that complex, because you are such a complex MC and of course a complex person, and then also on the mic and the stories you tell, and I loved it. Was there ever a moment in your life when you thought, like, if I maybe lost that complexity a little bit, I might have it easier to be part of this game?
I don't look at it in terms of like losing complexity. I think that there are times, especially in my writing, where I do consider relatability, you know. There was a huge duration of my career where I was dealing with a lot of like kind of highbrow concepts, more metaphysical concepts, things that people might not be familiar with that they had to kind of like explore or whatever, which I still love, which is still completely a part of me and like my studies and what I'm interested in. But I think as I started exploring like my, like digging deeper into like myself, I considered considered more creating music that is immediately relatable on like a human level, telling, you know, stories that can connect, you know, instead of just rapping for rap sake. I love that. Like, that's always going to be a part of my repertoire, you know, showing off the skills, showing off the wordplay, bars or whatever, but like just like telling those stories and hoping that those stories can hopefully help someone in the same way that it helped me writing them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In songs, like, you have a lot of songs like Forever, for example, where you talk about mental health, also about self-harm, about healing, about all of those really important topics. And you're really strong and really vulnerable at the same time in those songs. Was it hard for you to put these really personal topics into songs and be vulnerable on stage and in your art?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are still some songs that will never see the light of day because they're just too emotional for me, that I think that the purpose of them were for me to just write them and to get them out and not to share with the world. But yes, the songs that actually did make it to wax and make it to record, they were definitely challenging for me to just kind of expose certain things that I hadn't told friends and family. Like, especially talking about the self-harm part, I hadn't explained that, you know, everybody saw the scars, but, and they, I guess they kind of speculated on what that was, but I never, like, really shared with anyone, like, what I was going through and, like, what was the reason behind it and all of those things. So that was the first time doing that. And when you allow yourself to be vulnerable in that way, there's a risk that you take, you know? There's a risk that it won't be received, that people can prey on that kind of vulnerability, that, you know, so many things that if it is not successful, that you share this very personal part of yourself, and, you know, not that it was not important, but that it just wasn't, like, it didn't hit like that you expected it to do, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's just this, all of this, like, putting yourself out there, and, like, especially when I use for so long music and rap as my armor, to now strip down that armor and, like, not have that as a defense mechanism, but to lay it all bare, that's it's a challenge. But, you know, I've always approached music as a way, a form of catharsis, a form of healing. Like, my writing process is for me to be better as a person, for me to continuously work on myself and free up. And through that, hopefully others can do the same. So that's the work, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm really grateful for your music in general and that part of your music. It really, I really connect with it, and I know a lot of people connect with it on that level because you show your vulnerability. So thank you so much.
Appreciate that. That means a lot, you know.
So to wrap it up, maybe which question do you not want to hear ever again?
Probably, what's your top five MCs? That bothers me because I feel like music is like a living, breathing thing. Like there should be, for me, there is not one artist that is continuously in my top position because everybody has works of art that are just incredible to me, that can bring me to my knees, that can bring me to tears, whatever, whether it's hip hop, whether it's literature or whatever, to try to pigeonhole someone's likes to three or five, or it's such a difficult thing to do. And so, yeah, I would love to lay that question to rest.
All right. Well, I asked for your favorite album, so that's not a lot better, no, but. and which question would you like to answer, but no one ever asks?
That's a hard one. Maybe what's my favorite book or something like that? Or like, who are some of my favorite authors or whatever? Like, I don't get that. I'm sure someone has asked me that, but it's such a rare question. I love to explore that because I love literature and writers. And writers in the like kind of fiction genre, they inspire me and on so many levels in the same way that MCs inspire me. Like those were the first lyricists to me, you know? So yeah, I don't get that question nearly enough.
Okay, but what is your favorite book now that you've teased?
I have several. I mean, Half of a Yellow Sun is one that like is incredible to me by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. And I love The God of Little Things by Arundhati Roy. That's an incredible book. I love Beloved by Toni Morrison. Go Tell It on the Mountain by James Baldwin. Like so many, but to name a few. It's actually The God of Small Things. I just corrected it in my mind. The God of Small Things by Arundhati Roy, yeah.
And that's it for this month's episode of Doper Than Dope. My name is Nifty MC and I would really appreciate it if you leave a 5-star review for this podcast. And more importantly, check out Sarok's music. She has a load of mixtapes and her current album, The Sharecropper's Daughter, even has a deluxe edition with 6 additional tracks. Thanks for tuning in. Till next time. Bye.